Coming up on Golf Today, big-time stars have posted up in the Bahamas. Rory and Spieth, Brooks and Bryson, JT and the newly engaged Colin. We get you ready for round one of Tiger's Hero World Challenge. And the big cat just can't stay away from the range. He made more golf swings yesterday, showing a little bit of speed with longer clubs and keeping the golf world excited about the prospects of his comeback. And a major champ with some history with Tiger, Tom Lehman, joins us for Chats with a Champion as the first ever winner of the Hero World Challenge. We take the way back machine right here on Golf Today.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
Golf Today on a Thursday, game day. Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch of Golf Week Magazine. The Bahamas first round coverage today. We got Golf Central pregame at noon. Got the Hero World Challenge at 1:30 p.m. And this field, Eamon, is stacked.
We're finally getting the balls in the earth. The last big name, big field event of the year, even if all the focus is on the one guy who doesn't actually have a tee time this week.
It still feels like an important week, doesn't it? We got Tiger hitting shots. We've got Rory McIlroy in the field. Colin Morikawa going to get married at the age of 24. What are you most looking forward to this week? We've got a lot of storylines.
There's a lot of guys trying to put themselves in a better position going into 2022. Some guys have had successful years. Guys like Rory McIlroy has won twice. He's probably looking to try to hit a little reset button after what happened in Dubai a couple of weeks ago. Jordan Spieth, he's, gone away from a newborn child to actually show up in the Bahamas to play. I think he'd like to get something out of this week. There's a lot of people could like to make a statement here because really John Rahm's the only player of significance who's not in the field this week. So if you're going to win here, you're beating the best.
Fascinated by Justin Thomas and how he could say a year that included a Players' Championship victory was poor. And that really tells you about the expectations he has for himself. New caddy with our good buddy Bones McKay. I think he has some renewed energy and focus. And can you gain momentum, you think, at this time of year, even though it is a limited field 20-player event?
It's kind of hard to gain momentum when you're about to head home for the holidays for another
it's
month.
True.
But then again, the layoff isn't that long here because you're only talking about 4 weeks before these guys show up in Maui in a lot of cases. And then they're off and running again for another year. So, momentum and confidence can carry over. Probably more confidence than momentum.
Yeah, we have seen Hideki Matsuyama, for example, play very well at the end of a year, winning in China, winning twice in Japan, then winning the Hero World Challenge, and then beating Webb Simpson in a playoff in February, winning 4 out of 5 starts. So you can see some important things happen this week in the Bahamas. And we got some big-time names in the field, as mentioned, the aforementioned Colin Morikawa, 2-time major champ, and Rory McIlroy, the 4-time major champ. They're paired together 12:22 p.m. Eastern time in Albany in the Bahamas. So let's flash back. It's a couple Sundays ago, the DP World Tour Championship. Rory McIlroy had that 54-hole lead, one-shot lead, and things started to get a little crooked at 15. Bogey 3 of his last 4, finished tied for 6th, and of course, visibly upset. Took it out on his shirt, ripping the fabric and stewing alone. And yesterday, he reluctantly addressed the topic with the media.
Your shirt is in one piece.
It is. It's another joke you tried to make. It's not that funny.
You didn't like that one either?
No.
Rory, how long did it take to rip the shirt, and when was the last time you did that before Dubai?
It didn't take... I mean, I pulled on my collar and it ripped. I don't know if I've ever done it again or done it before. I went to the pro shop, bought a new one, threw that one in the trash.
Thanks.
I mean, this f***ing ripped shirt like a Jesus.
Woo! Hot Rory!
Why wouldn't he get testy? I mean, he's asked 3 questions about a ripped shirt. Tiger had a career-threatening and life-threatening car crash, gets asked 1 question, dismisses it, and nobody asks a follow-up question. But Rory's shirt is apparently worth 3.
Does that tell you anything about him, that reaction? Is it more about this week in general or more of a sea change in where he is right now post-Ryder Cup?
I don't buy the sea change argument at all with Rory. Rory's always had a little testiness in him on occasion, a little fire and edge in there. I don't see anything different in Rory. I think frustrations have certainly built up this year. I think that's what the Ryder Cup thing was, the loss of his golf swing during the course of the year, and he wasn't really getting it back in his work with Pete Cowan. Now he's back working with Michael Bannon, and I think he believes he's hit a reset button going into next year. But I don't believe there was any kind of sea change personality that went on with Rory. I just think the corrosive effects of playing golf that was not up to his standards all year long just finally bubbled over in the Ryder Cup.
I didn't mind the rip shirt. I mean, the guy is tearing at the collar, he said. This is like the baseball player who draws the collar, you know, strikes out three times and takes a bat to the Gatorade bucket. I mean, that happens. We see it in sports. Guys go in the locker room and throw their helmet and break lockers. Henrik Stenson's had some issues with lockers back in the day and had to pay for the said locker. So I think, if anything, it just shows how much he cares about the game and how frustrated he was that he had a lead and an incredible opportunity to finish the year the way he wanted to on the European Tour, another DP World Tour, and he let one get away.
Yeah, I think that's really what it comes down to. You know, people like to get a little fiery once in a while. He probably is embarrassed by it, I'm guessing. Probably thinks it wasn't a great look. But people in golf love nothing more than clutching at pearls at something. If old Tom Morris didn't do it, you shouldn't be doing it now. Well, for all we know, Tom Morris was ripping up his tweeds 150 years ago.
So no sea change in personality for Rory McIlroy. What are your expectations this week and maybe early 2022?
Well, he's going to start his year next year in the Middle East. He's going to play in Abu Dhabi. He won't make his debut in the United States until Riviera in February. So it'll be a little longer before we see him again. He's not going to play any of the Hawaiian events. So we're not going to see Rory probably back in this part of the world for another, probably, 6 weeks, 2 months? I think he's confident in where he's headed. He spent 2 weeks in Florida since the Ryder Cup working with Michael Bannon, who had flown over from Ireland for those intense sessions. He looked very, very good in Dubai until Sunday. He wasn't getting putts to go, and then it all kind of unraveled over the last four holes. But he looked really good in that tournament. He looked really good at the CJ Cup that he won in Vegas. So he definitely believes that he is on the right path. And we all know where that path needs to lead for Rory McIlroy. It's this narrative that follows him around that he needs another major, because next year we're moving into that eighth-year mark since the majors. And he's still only 32, but, you know, that it becomes a crushing weight at a certain point.
Yeah, how do you think he's handled that? Because that is the question that's in the back of every golf writer and golf broadcaster's mind when it comes to Rory McIlroy. And we can talk about winning at Quail and winning in Las Vegas, but for Rory McIlroy, who won his first two majors by a combined 16 shots and did so in the absence of Tiger Woods being Tiger Woods. That, in my opinion, is the story. That until he can break the seal on a fifth major championship, we're going to kind of be dancing around. Well, is it a decent season? Is it an okay season? For Rory McIlroy to start his career by shooting 61 at Quail and then to win an eight-shot victory at Congressional and Kiowa, it's hard to run away from that expectation once those results have been produced.
And all of these guys get judged by different standards. The standard we apply to a rookie out there this year for what constitutes a good season is very different from a guy who's been out there for a while. It's very different from a guy that we then apply a standard to, like Rory McIlroy. And the major championships are the standard that has now been applied to Rory and what he ought to be doing. He's made the point himself. It's not as though he's been hanging around in the clouds for 7 years. You know, he's won the Players, which a lot of people would put in the category of a major, which will send some golf Twitter heads exploding out there, but it is, in every respect, the equal of a major championship. Then he's throwing a couple of FedEx Cups there as well. It's not as though Rory hasn't actually accomplished anything. He's gotten to 20 PGA Tour wins, most of which have come in those last 7 years. But again, there is this burden that is put around him, justifiably so and deservedly so. He set a standard for the majors that he has not reached then again in 7 years.
Well, you're coming to a close for a lot of the players this week, but lots to talk about for next year as well. For more, we welcome in Rex Hoggart from the Bahamas. Good morning, Rex. What do you have?
Morning, Damon. This is really how a headline earlier this week has sparked a broader conversation on the role of players as independent contractors. Now, this is all about the Saudi International, which is going to be an event on the Asian Tour that's being played in February opposite the PGA Tour event at Pebble Beach. They released their initial field earlier this week, and on that initial field were 23 PGA Tour players. Now, according to tour regs, those players need to be granted conflicting event releases to be able to participate in that event. I spoke with a tour spokesperson who said that none of those releases have been granted as of yet, and under the rules, the tour has until 30 days before the first round of that event to do it. But on Wednesday, Rory McIlroy and Xander Schauffele, who was on that original commitment list, were asked about a situation that seems to be reaching a tipping point.
I mean, I think we're independent contractors and we should be able to play where we want to play. In my opinion, I think the tour should grant releases. It's an Asian Tour event. It's an event that has OWGR rankings. I mean, I don't see any reason why they wouldn't. Well, I do see reasons why they wouldn't grant releases, but I think if they're trying to do what's best for their members, and their members are going to a place other than the PGA Tour and being able to earn that money, I mean, we're independent contractors, and I feel like we should be able to do that if that's what our personal choice is. My personal choice is not to do that, but obviously a lot of players are doing that, and I think it's fair to let them do that.
You worry we're going to go down a road of legal battles and arguments? And
yeah, I think so. I think so. I think the professional game needs to get to a point where we as professionals need to know where we stand. Are we actually independent contractors? Are we employed by a certain entity? Are we, you know, so that's, you know, that's stuff that's just, there's a lot of gray area in that, and that's what sort of needs to be sorted out, I think.
We don't know if this will come to this, but would you have a problem with the tour telling you that you can't play somewhere?
I mean, yeah, I feel like it's very absolute. I feel like there just needs to be some sort of counter in the way certain things work. I mean, they can do, you know, I'll try and do what I need to do, and they'll tell me what I can and can't do at a certain point. But I feel like they need to counter. They can't just tell me, no, you can't do this, and then just kick rocks, kid. You know, that's not really how I'd want to do things. So they've been pretty good about, I try and play golf. I'm just trying to, I have an agent and a manager, and that's their job. You know, I'm on the green grass, and they're supposed to handle all the talk. So nothing too crazy has come up to me yet from my agent or from my manager. So I feel like I'm just still here just trying to play golf at a high level, and then they'll show me the cards whenever the cards are drawn.
Now, this stems from a larger conversation about a proposed Super Golf League. It's been rumored and talked about for years, but it's important to point out that there have been no players who have officially announced that they are going to go with the Super League, and there's also been no official announcement about the Super League itself. But on Wednesday, Colin Morikawa was asked if there's room in the game for two global tours.
You know, look, I'm 24, and I'm keeping all eyes and ears open to everything, but the PGA Tour has been the focal point of my entire career, right? You grow up watching the PGA Tour, you grow up watching guys like Tiger, guys like Rory just dominate the game, and that's what you want to do. You come out here and win. So, you know, hopefully everything is out there and you start listening what's best, what's better. But look, I think at the end of the day, all we're trying to do is grow the game. So what's going to be the best for us professional golfers to grow the game? How do we create this outlet that is not just for a U.S. market, but is global, right? I was asking Dr. Manjal today about how big golf is in India, and, you know, it really isn't that big, and how do you grow it in different parts of the world? So that's what's been cool is that, you know, we're able to travel, we're able to come to places like these, even though it's gorgeous. How do you just make that impact? And I think you look at a guy like Tiger who has done his entire career pretty much on the PGA Tour, and he's made that impact, right? And at 24, it's thinking, how do I make that impact in 5 years, in 10 years, but even, you know, in a month or in a year? How do you make that impact so young? And so look, when it comes to Saudi, when it comes to the PGA Tour, I think the underlying message that everyone needs to realize is we're here to grow the game.
Now, I also asked Colin if he had been approached by any representatives from the Super League, and he said he has. He said most of that information is filtered through his agent, but, quote, the one thing he wanted to focus on is get as much information as possible. Damon?
Rex Hoggard breaking it down for us in the Bahamas. Much more from him in a little bit. How much is this about the power of the dollar versus loyalty to the PGA Tour?
I think it's entirely about dollars, and Jay Monahan realizes that it's about dollars, which is why he's throwing dollars at his end to try to fend off this Saudi threat. And none of these guys that we just heard from, Rory, Xander, or Colin Morikawa, are saying anything that other players haven't said before. Mm. There was a wonderful earnestness about Colin Morikawa talking about growing the game, because that has become one of these Orwellian phrases that is utterly meaningless in golf. And particularly when it relates to the Saudi Super League, because it is not about growing the game. It's not even about return on investment. It's about laundering a grotesque reputation. Mm. And you can dress it up in all the finery that you want, but that is really what the Saudi Golf League boils down to. The broader point of whether or not players should get releases is a much trickier one for the tour to navigate, because they have set precedent in the past for this tournament, both when it was sanctioned in Europe and for other Asian tour events. So it's very difficult for the tour to turn around and say, now you guys can't go there and pick up a bag of money once a year. And I think the tour will probably end up granting the releases in the hopes that these guys think, okay, we'll go with a wheelbarrow full of cash once a year to Riyadh, and then we'll not worry about the Saudi Golf League beyond that. But the tour is kind of backed into a little bit of a corner here. It's a cat and mouse game on both sides, and right now the players are kind of the pawns.
It is a cat and mouse game, but the biggest cat on Tuesday, Tiger Woods, he didn't expound on everything under the sun during his press conference, but I want to take you back to something he said about where he stands in terms of the PGA Tour and these rival golf leagues.
Well, it's going to be his decision, period. I have decided for myself that I'm supporting the PGA Tour. And that's where my legacy is. I've been fortunate enough to have won 82 events on this tour and 15 major championships and been a part of the World Golf Championships, the start of them and the end of them. So I have an allegiance to the PGA Tour, and I understand that some of the comparisons are is a very similar to when Arnold and Jack broke off from the PGA of America to start the tour. I don't see it that way. I think the tour has done a fantastic job. Jay's done an unbelievable job in a very difficult time during the pandemic. You know, when we had there was ample opportunity for players to leave. We were the first term. We're first sporting tour to start. So with that, yes, did we have some protocol issues at times? Yes, we had to learn on the fly. But Jay and the staff have done an incredible job of that. And so I think the tour is in great hands. They're doing fantastic. And prize money is going up. It's just not guaranteed money like, you know, most sports are. It's just like tennis. You got to go out there and earn it.
If you're a PGA Tour player who's a bit unsure, you're waffling about listening to a rival golf league, and you hear that statement from Tiger Woods, how impactful is that in your
mind? That's Tiger's dropping napalm on them right there, because that was all the Saudi talking points that he was just obliterating. He addressed the money issue. He addressed various protocol issues. And chiefly, it's the legacy issue, where Tiger essentially telling these guys that now is the point where you're deciding if you're an athlete or you're an entertainer. And if you're an entertainer, you can go play exhibition golf, but you're not going to be measured against me, and I'm the guy you're being measured against.
Tiger's always been about hard work, hasn't he? About earning it, about finding a way to get the job done. And I think it was purposeful, the fact that he was bringing up appearance fees versus going out there and earning your dollar by winning PGA Tour events and winning major championships and getting money on the back end of your performance, not on the front end of it.
And that's really where the dichotomy comes in a lot of this argument here over the Saudi issue, because you have guys on one hand saying we are independent contractors, we work where we want, and on the other hand, they're going, give me the guaranteed money.
Yeah,
I don't actually want to have to work for that money. I don't want it to be based on my performance. I just want it before I even show up. And it really exposes what it is about. It's purely about entertainment value golf as a product. But the purpose of it will always be simply laundering the Saudi reputation. It is not about sport. It is, and there's no difference between, there's no barrier between the Super Golf League and its financing and the Saudi government. This is a hostile takeover attempt at an entire sport.
A story will continue to follow into 2022. Big stories this week as well in the game of golf. Even in December, big week for Colin Morikawa on and off the golf course, sharing his engagement to girlfriend Kat after winning the Race to Dubai. Morikawa gave Keith Pelley a little hint.
Not fiancé yet, but soon to be, maybe, Keith. Keep it under wraps. Not fiancé yet, but soon to be, maybe, Keith. Keep it under wraps.
About that, Keith should be a journalist, kind of prying for some information.
Yeah, he doesn't know how many page views he just let go there.
Absolutely. Congratulations to Colin Morikawa and Kat. They've been together a long, long time. Well, it is a game day on this Thursday. That's a major champ, former world number one Justin Rose, getting ready for his tee time, 12:11 p.m. Eastern time. We lead you right up to Golf Central pregame at noon. And speaking of major championship winners, Tom Lehman joins us for a past champions chat. He's the winner of the inaugural Hero World Challenge. Got highlights from his win in 2000 after this.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet. This season, don't just bet, live your bet life.
Welcome back to Golf Today. First round coverage of Tiger's event, the Hero World Challenge, gets underway at 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time right here on Golf. Golf Central pregame at noon Eastern Time. Let's go way back. 2000 marked the inaugural playing of the Hero World Challenge. Tom Lehman birdied five of his last six holes to win the event by three shots and break his four-year victory drought. Ryder Cup, captain, major, champion, world number one, 12th career PGA Tour champions wins as well. The five PGA Tour wins, won that player of the year on the Corn Ferry Tour, PGA Tour, and PGA Tour champions as well. It's time now for Champions Chats. Chats with a champ. Got the 96 champ, Tom Lehman, from the Open and also winner of the inaugural Hero. When you think back to that wild week in Arizona, Tom, the hail, a home game for you, what are the memories that come to mind?
Well, you know, it's interesting. It was over New Year's. That was the day. So it was over New Year's, and it was Y2K, and nobody knew what was going to happen with the turning over from, you know, from one century to the next. And so we actually had a day off in the middle of the tournament, played two rounds, and then had a day off on New Year's Day, and then continued on the 2nd of January, you know, to play the second, the third, and then the fourth round. So it was a very unique week from start to finish. You know, hail in Scottsdale, which interrupted the final round, and then a big finish the last nine holes. You know, once the hail, like, I mean, this was Phil. He chipped in, and he didn't want to come back and wait and finish later. He chipped it in on the last hole, you know, for a birdie. You know, otherwise he's coming waiting for 3 hours and coming back to finish. But you know, it was a great finish for me in front of the hometown fans, you know, birding five of the last six and beating David Duval.
Yeah, you had hail. You also had heckling. I usually think of the modern game, Brooks and Bryson, or 1962 Jack at Oakmont, Arnie's backyard. But that week, the heckling against David Duval got so bad at Greyhawk, he cleaned out his locker on Saturday night and had to be convinced to stay, which he ultimately did. What do you remember about that?
Yeah. Well, you know, I do recall him. First of all, he's a very good friend and a guy that I respect tremendously. And he wasn't happy. And I know that, you know, the final round being paired with him, you know, I had all of my family and friends, and they were hooting and hollering for me, and they weren't heckling him, but they were certainly pro Tom Lehman in the gallery. And I was wondering why he was, you know, wasn't happy. And I guess that explains a bit to me of what kind of was his purpose of his, or the reason for his kind of darker mood. He just seemed very unhappy with the whole experience.
Tom, that wasn't even your only win in Scottsdale that month. You went on and won the Waste Management Phoenix Open a few weeks later. That turned out to be your last PGA Tour victory. Did you have any sense at the time, at 41, that might have been your last win, or were you still fully confident at that point that you had more in you?
You know, I for certain felt like I had a lot more, and I did play a bunch of good golf, but, you know, I learned, you know, obviously you look back on things and you understand what is it that wins tournaments, and, you know, great short games win tournaments. I did a lot of things in golf extremely well. I did some things fantastically, and my short game was always good. Once in a while, great. And when it was great, then I could win, and I could win by a lot. But those who have the consistently great short games are the guys who win a lot. And when I think back about my career, you know, knowing how hard I worked on my chipping and my putting, and, you know, that I was good at it, I just wasn't good enough at it. I wasn't great at it. And so results always go to those who can make that putt when you have to. And you look at guys like who are the great champions and the short games they possessed. It's really the separating thing between, I say, you know, the great players and the truly great superstars.
Well, Tom, you started your career banging around the mini tours. You told me like 20 years ago that you played in this event, the K-Fire, where you slept in your car without air conditioning, but plenty of mosquitoes to keep you company. What do you recall about that time of your life?
Well, that would be a far, far cry from the Saudi Golf League, I can tell you that. I heard that last segment, and it makes me shake my head. But, you know, I will say one thing about the PGA Tour, if I can just divert for a second, is I have complete faith in the integrity of the young guys on the PGA Tour today. I'm so impressed by them. I think the PGA Tour is in good hands, and I think it will be for a long time. But anyway, getting back to, you know, those days of sleeping in my car, I mean, you you simply did whatever you had to do back then. It was a far different world with golf than it is now. There was way fewer opportunities, and there wasn't a whole lot of money, and certainly you never put any cash in your pocket. So you did whatever you had to do. You went wherever you had to go. And I think if I could say anything about the world of golf back then, is that those who were truly willing to do whatever it took and go wherever you had to go and do whatever it takes, those are the guys that survived and made it. And, so perseverance has always been a big thing, and probably even more so back then.
I remember your opposing Ryder Cup captain, Tom, who spent his first few years as a golfer, Ian Woosnam, driving around a camper van around Europe. Mm. So, I mean, he kind of started out in the same way in this game as you did. You not only went everywhere, you actually won everywhere. You won the Open in England, but you won in Scotland, you won in Japan, you won in Argentina. Is there something to be said for the experience for younger players to travel more, experience different conditions, leaving aside this kind of Saudi money grab idea that you referenced, but just simply the experience of going into the unknown, really?
Well, there is that. The one thing about golf, which is certainly true, and the same as a lot of other things, is when you feel comfortable, it's easier to play well. And so when you go somewhere where you're uncomfortable, somewhere where you feel like you're a little bit lost and maybe don't quite belong, whether it be culturally or language or just the level of competition, it does you a great amount of good to go to a place like that and then succeed. It builds confidence. I certainly believe that Gary Player, is 100% correct when he talks about his career of being a globetrotter and winning everywhere and how difficult that was. It truly is. So I think that is one of my things that I'm most proud of is, that I have won in every continent except Australia and, of course, Antarctica. But, everywhere else I've gone and I've won. And that it does take a lot of commitment. It takes a lot of courage and a lot of mental toughness. I could tell you a lot of stories about going to play in Africa and, the things we experienced there. But to go there and to win somewhere is a big deal.
Still some time to win in Australia. Not so sure about Antarctica. Tiger Woods has won quite a bit around the world as well. You guys intersected quite a bit back in your heyday and his heyday. He shot 76 on that Sunday at Greyhawk, by the way, had three double bogeys. Are you paying attention to this latest comeback attempt? When you see Tiger now, what comes to your mind?
Well, I just, I personally believe that that he may not go down as the greatest player in history simply because of the way his career has kind of been shortened by so many different injuries and things. But absolutely without any doubt in my mind, for the 10 or the 12 or 15 years where he was really at his best, there was nobody who ever played the game better. In my opinion, he, at that point, was the best player in the history of the game, and he'll be always, in my mind, the best player in the history of the game. When I think about him, I think about the fact that he's always exceeded expectations. There has never been a time when there wasn't these unbelievable expectations that were heaped upon him, which he didn't actually just meet them, he exceeded them. Winning six tournaments in a row, whoever even dreamed that anybody could approach Byron Nelson's record of 10 or 11 or whatever he won in a row. And I thought at that point in time that Tiger was going to get there and beat that. That's how high a regard I had for him as a golfer. And so this comeback, I never put anything past him. I know that he is downplaying the expectations and probably for good reason. But there is no expectation that I don't ever think he'll surpass him. And this is just another hurdle that I think he'll blow by. And the world will be once again amazed at his tenacity, his courage, his ability and his maturity and wisdom.
From someone who's been inside the ropes with Tiger Woods himself, Tom, it's been a pleasure covering your career the last 20 years for me personally. Thanks so much for your time and visiting 2000 with us.
All right, guys. Great being with you, too. Thank you. Have a great day.
Welcome back to Golf Today. Scottie Scheffler getting ready for round one, 11:16 a.m. tee time alongside Sam Burns. 2-0-1. At Whistling Straits, best player on tour, perhaps without a victory, finished runner-up in Houston a few weeks back, making his tournament debut at the Hero World Challenge. There's Rex Hoggard walking the green, strolling around, looking for some notes and nuggets for our show.
Always on the prowl, Rexy.
Gotta love it. Speaking of on the prowl, Tiger Woods making progress. This video, 3 seconds in length, a couple Sundays ago, more than 7.5 million views on Twitter now.
He broke the interwebs that day.
He did indeed. And then now looking like the host with the most. This was after his press conference on Tuesday. Looking forward to a great week at Albany. Looks like he's got no stress. Big smile. And then the internet breaks again. I was getting ready for bed, and I started scrolling Twitter, and I saw this.
He's taking off head covers. He's got fairway metals out there, and he's swinging with some speed. He's certainly swinging with enough speed to play the PNC Parent-Child Championship in 2 weeks.
Is that done now? Is that a done deal in your mind?
I think he's going to do it. If I was going to bet, I think he's going to show.
I mean, you take that video from almost any other time, it looks like Tiger's just hitting golf balls. And you mentioned that the PNC Championship, 36 holes, flat course.
In a cart.
In a cart. Son Charlie can hit a lot of the shots. Tiger can choose to hit a shot or not. I mean, is that the perfect place almost, considering the joy it brought him and the fact that it won't be as taxing on his body as some other spots?
There's certainly the physical and the psychological aspect to it as well, but we had Nota on the show yesterday, and Nota wouldn't rule out the prospect of him doing it as well. And he also pointed out that last year, Charlie hit a lot of the tee shots, chiefly because of where Charlie's tees were, as he was 11 years old then, 12 years old now. So Tiger wouldn't perhaps be having to hit as many long shots as he would in a typical round of golf. And where else can Tiger show up where he's going to be under less serious scrutiny? Because who's really going to kind of really do a deep dive on Tiger's swing mechanics and his well-being and everything else when he's out there playing a hit and giggle with his son? It's a very different narrative that will surround that tournament, and I don't think there's a better place where he could do it. It just depends on physically, does he feel he's there? When you look at those videos, he looks as though he's good enough to go.
That week in Orlando turns men into boys and women into girls. I mean, you see Bernhard Langer smile in ways he doesn't week to week on PGA Tour Champions. David Duval never saw him smile the way he did when he won in Orlando. And Tiger, his energy and body language, so different playing golf alongside his son. In some ways, that is the ideal place for a relaxed, loose week, couple of rounds.
Are you predicting a win now, Damon? Have we gone from is he playing to is he going to win?
I've seen
this
the man
might be the problem here.
I'm not ready to go there. But I tell you what, I do lean on Nota and I lean on Tom Lehman, guys who know him and have been in that ring with him and know that he's not doing this just to hang out. This is not calisthenics for him. If he's got golf clubs in his hands, he's thinking about playing and winning.
We sat here and asked Nota yesterday what he made of Tiger's comment when Tiger said, I don't need to make the climb again. I've climbed Everest enough. And we asked Nota, do you believe him? And Nota just laughed. He literally laughed at the very sentiment that Tiger would not be willing or eager or intending to make that climb again. Tiger's not going out there to be ceremonial. Tiger's going out there to at least think he's got a chance of putting himself in the mix once in a while. He's 46. He's in at the end of this month, he's an old 46, given how much scar tissue there is there, but he's not 46 from the neck up.
Yeah, that's the thing. The game involves the swing, yes, but the mind, hugely important. And nobody mentally tougher, nobody charts golf courses, nobody can see a golf course the way that Tiger Woods historically does.
And if people think any of that toughness or tenacity has gone, just think back. It was, 9 months ago? He had a 50-50 chance by his own estimation of losing a leg, and there he is out on the range at the Bahamas, hitting golf balls with what looks to be a very functional swing. The tenacity hasn't gone anywhere.
Yep, got tenacity. He's got some speed in that swing. Definitely more than I expected on the range at the Hero. Speaking of the Hero, everybody wants to be a hero this week in terms of winning the Hero World Challenge. Man, we've seen some great finishes through these. Remember 2010, the year of GMAC?
This was when Steve Williams had taken off his caddy bib out in the fairway when Tiger stuffed it close, thinking it was all over, and then GMAC said, not quite yet.
Yeah, he won the U.S. Open that year, Ryder Cup Hero, and he relieved Tiger of a four-shot lead.
And then he did it again in the playoff.
So good. Out at Sherwood, outside of Los Angeles. Yeah, GMAC, height of power. Not the only time that Tiger was relieved of his lead. This was 2013 now. Tiger had a three-shot lead on the front nine. Zach Johnson birdied 16 and 17, hit an awful second shot. Then he holds this from 58 for par.
That's when you just know it's not going to be your day, Tiger.
Yeah, I love the reaction. Damon Green and Zach Johnson go on to beat Tiger Woods in a playoff. In 2014, this was kind of Jordan Spieth telling us what his career might look like. This was the year he won the Australian Open by 6 in the wintertime, then he arrives to Isleworth to win the Hero by 10.
This is a harbinger of what 2015 was going to be, that brought him the Masters, the U.S. Open, and painfully close in the other two majors.
Absolutely. Then 2017, Ricky Fowler. How about a final round 61, came from seven shots back of Charlie Hoffman to beat said Hoffman by four shots.
That it all looked so easy for Ricky back then. Let's hope it's the same way again someday.
Yeah, looking for some mojo. John Rahm looking for some rest this time of year, but didn't need it back in 2018. Rounds of 71, 63, 69, 65, four-shot victory over Tony Finau. Then in 2019, John Rahm went on to win on the PGA Tour and then three times on the European Tour. So the strength of field, it's always strong. You talk about the opportunity for these players to kind of fatten up on the official world golf ranking list every year since 2012. Last place finisher was current or future major champ Eamon Lynch.
Yeah, and both ends of the leaderboard are compelling in this tournament, which isn't true anywhere else. There's only 20 guys in the field this year, usually 18. You look back there 4 years ago, Brooks Koepka was dead last in the field, went on and won two majors the next year. Tiger was second to last in 2018, came out the next year and won the Masters. There are no suckers at Albany this week. Every one of these guys is eminently capable of going out and winning a major next year if they haven't already won one this year.
I think it's a great point. I remember watching Hideki Matsuyama at the Hero in 2016, and after rounds of golf, he was out there on the putting green by himself. It's a pretty relaxed week for the most part. He was not relaxing, and he had a bunch of media around him. He'd already won in China and two starts in Japan. He wins four or five starts, including the Hero World Challenge. Then he wins in Phoenix in February. You're right. These guys, they take this employment very seriously, and this is a week of opportunity.
Wasn't it Kevin Kisner who said this ain't no holiday? None of these guys are out there actually on vacation. Yeah. A lot of these guys are working on new swing instruction. They're working on new equipment that they're trying to bed in. This is an experimental week for a lot of guys and an experimental time of the year. What we used to call the silly season for the funny money is there. It perhaps doesn't have the same weight as PGA Tour victories do or certainly major championships, but it is a week that they are using to try to get ready with something, whether it's equipment or swing for next year.
Good time of year to try out some new gear. Patrick Reed's on the putting green. In fact, speaking of new equipment, Rex Hoggers going to have more on his putter later in the show. Patrick Reed looking for a little mojo. 11:49 a.m. Eastern is his tee time in Albany, first round of the Hero World Challenge. It's time now for Stock Watch. Let's take a look and see whose kind of stock is down. We got some quality players, but not everybody has the game right where they want it to be. Maybe who's your guy whose stock is down at this point?
To me, it's got to be Justin Rose, who seems to be in what I hope is not inexorable decline here, because he's 41 years old. He's dropped all the way to 47th in the world. I ran into him the day he won the Payne Stewart Award down at the Tour Championship, and he talked about how he's moved his family back to England now, where the kids will go to school. But he's almost 3 years removed from his last victory on the PGA Tour. He's still capable of some very consistent golf, particularly on the biggest stages. But the Farmers Insurance win in 2019 was Justin Rose's last victory, and that's now almost 3 years.
Yeah, I remember speaking to him probably 5 years ago about what he wanted left in his career to accomplish, what was left. And he said he was looking for that cherry on top of the sundae. And I thought it might have been that Olympic gold medal. But I think he believes there's still some big appointments that he wants to make. He's kind of right on the edge, in my opinion, of being a World Golf Hall of Fame member. You can say what you want about the qualifications. He seems to be kind of right there as a major champ. Won that 2013 U.S. Open at Marin. Olympic gold medalist. He's won a FedEx Cup. I mean, he's had some big moments. We saw him on the leaderboard at the Masters in April as well.
Yeah, he shows up in big events, and his wins actually tend to come on a lot of big courses. There's a great legacy to the courses that Justin Rose has won on throughout his career on multiple continents. But at 41, and he's got a back that tends to flare up once in a while as well, you really have to wonder what kind of runway is left in front of Justin at this point. It doesn't seem at the moment to be all that long.
Yeah, from one major champ, one U.S. Open champ to another. I'm going to the guy who won the year before Justin Rose. That's Webb Simpson. We haven't heard much from Webb in the last year and a half. No victories on the PGA Tour at the age of 36. Still very much, I think, in his prime, but someone who kind of, we've watched his putting woes happen, and the putter really hasn't been the problem. If you look at his numbers over the last couple of years, we're going to see him putt right here. He was 22nd in strokes gained putting in 2021. He was 13th in strokes gained putting in 2020. He was 134th in driving distance in 2021. This was someone who, back in 2011, was 51st in driving distance. So one of the bigger deficiencies of his game has just been that he's hitting longer clubs into these greens in this era of power.
He's also statistically one of the best scramblers on the PGA Tour year in and year out, and that makes up for a lot of sins at the other end of the hole if you can scramble at the business end of the hole, which is what has really defined Webb Simpson's career. But again, he tends to win on a lot of golf courses that are on the shorter side as well. And so the opportunities for a guy who is not going to overpower anything, the opportunities that come up every year for a Webb Simpson are fewer than are going to come up for some of the bigger hitters.
A lot of respect for Webb and how he had to put his game under the knife, literally. The putting ban, the anchored putting style that he couldn't use. And I remember talking to him about that and how he went through the process of trying to putt without using the anchored method, and how he would do money games first at Quail Hollow and then pro-ams on the PGA Tour before he felt comfortable enough to bring it out to PGA Tour competition. And to be 22nd in strokes gained putting in 2021 and 13th in 2020 speaks to how much time he's put into the grind.
And if you look at the guys who were expected to really struggle with the banning of anchored putting, he would have been on that list, and he has probably compensated for that better than almost anyone out there.
All right, that's the stock down, but, you know, players with work to do. How about guys stock up? Is there a player you're looking at right now that said, this is where I'm putting my cheese on?
The guy playing with the defending champion today, Vic Hovland, 24 years old. He's up to number 9 in the world. Vic Hovland loves the tropical courses. You know, he's 3 victories. He's won twice in Mayakoba, and he's won in Puerto Rico as well. But the next step for Victor Hovland is where he has headroom, which is in the major championships. He's played 6 as a professional. He had to withdraw at Torrey Pines this year with an eye injury in the second round. But otherwise, he's never finished worse than 30th in the 5 majors he's played as a pro. And he made the cut in both the US Open and the Masters as the US amateur champion as well. So to me, there is headroom there. This is a guy whose game is on a trajectory that is entirely going in the right direction. He's just getting stronger, and he's working on the weakest part of his game, which was historically his chipping.
Plays hard golf courses pretty well. A lot of courses that he's seeing for the first time, low amateur in a U.S. Open. We've seen him kind of learn to kind of eliminate the big number, though it got him at the WGC at Concession. Someone who's made a Ryder Cup team already. I think the arrow is pointing up for him. Obviously, his attitude is fantastic on the golf course. He can poke fun at himself, at his short game woes, but still finds a way to get the ball in the hole and win on the PGA Tour, which is not easy to do.
And another thing that's not easy to do out here is actually make friends. And Padraig Harrington said at Whistling Straits that he had 11 guys who wanted to play with Victor Hovland.
How about that?
That week.
That's a high praise. Well, a guy who could have been at Whistling Straits in Colorado, Wisconsin, is Sam Burns. He's off in just a few minutes from now. A winner already in this young season on the PGA Tour. He won last season on the PGA Tour. Could have been a part of that Ryder Cup for Steve Stricker. Was just on the outside looking in. This part of his game, I think for a big man who hits the ball as far as he does, his putting is sublime. I think this is what can be a separator for him. Very little weaknesses in the game of Sam Burns.
Yeah, and when you start to pull together a list of guys that you think next year has to represent a chance for a breakout year for them, you're going to put a guy like Sam Burns on that list. He's gotten his win. He's put himself in contention often enough. Now you start to think, where's your next step? Where are you moving up a level on the tour?
Yeah, first, 14th, 5th, and 7th so far in this young season. For more from the Bahamas, we once again turn to Rex Hoggard. What can you tell us about Patrick Reed and that putter, Rex?
Well, you guys were just talking about it early in the show, Damon, about this is the perfect time of year for guys to start tinkering a little bit, looking ahead to 2022, and Patrick Reed is one of those guys. And he is not a player that changes putters very often. Given his record, it's understandable. But he is trying out a new putter this week. He had his manufacturer make him a putter that was a little bit heavier. To put that in context, I was just talking with his caddy. He went from a D1 weight for his normal putter to a D4. So it's a significant amount of weight. And essentially what he's trying to do is to use this on slower greens. He feels like it gives him a little bit more control over the golf ball. But he was quick to point out Albany's greens are not slow, but it did feel comfortable the last few days. And he has it in the bag today. And there was one unique option on the bottom of the putter. His manufacturer actually welded the name of his daughter, Windsor Wells, on the bottom.
Like it. New equipment, new caddies. Rex, what can you tell us about Tony Finau's caddy this week? Because I understand if anybody needs a loan, the caddy is the guy to ask.
A couple different caddies in the field this week, but you're right. Tony's is probably the most impressive, or the one that you're going to look at and shake your head a little bit. Tony's regular caddy, Mark Urbanek, is at home. His wife is expecting a child. So Tony told us yesterday that he, a couple of weeks ago, approached his good friend. His name is Randy Smith. That name may sound familiar. He is the owner of the Utah Jazz. A few weeks ago, asked him, would you mind jumping in and doing this, and he said he was happy to join. Now, I did ask, how are they going to work out the pay scale this week? And Tony just sort of laughed and said there will be a pay cut involved for his caddy.
Stuff. I'm actually looking for Lakers-Spurs tickets over the Christmas holiday, so maybe I'll ask Tony Finau's caddy for some ducats, though he does own the Utah Jazz. Thank you so much, Rex. Your thoughts on Tony Finau? Got that big win during the playoffs.
Not often you see a caddy who's wealthier than the player. No. But that's certainly the case out here. You know, Tony's another of those guys you think you really have to put in that category of what else have you got in 22? We know you can put yourself in contention almost every week that you play, but there aren't really enough trophies to back up the talent that we see out of Tony Finau all the time.
Yeah, I like that he kind of held himself to account, talking about needing to be a little bit tougher on Sundays. It's one thing if someone holding a pen or a microphone says that, but when he says that himself, that he needed to kind of learn to have a little bit of a stronger chin on Sunday, that tells you that he could look in the mirror and see some deficiencies and work on that. He's the one who said, I want to adopt a Mamba mentality in the wake of Kobe Bryant's passing. Of course, a big basketball fan is Tony Finau, and he tried to kind of find a way to do that. I thought he showed some great toughness down the stretch across from New York City.
He did. When he won that Northern Trust in the playoff and very dramatic Sunday finish there, he showed a lot more fortitude than we'd seen out of Tony on some other occasions.
Yeah, it was also in the mix when Tiger Woods won his 15th major championship at the Masters just 2 years ago. Tony off at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time. First round of the Hero World Challenge. And coming up next, speaking of the hero, one of our heroes, John Wood, caddy turned broadcaster, going to join us. Knows a little bit about those green reading books used on tour. We'll talk about the latest rule that limits their use and who might be most impacted by that.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet. This season, don't just bet, live your bet life.
Back on Golf Today, first round coverage of the Hero World Challenge is coming your way today. Golf Channel, 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Beautiful views. Albany, the Bahamas. Stacked field, 20 of the game's best. Now, here's what you need to know on this Thursday. So golf's governing bodies earlier in the week made available a model local rule to further limit the use of green reading materials. Model local rule G-11 enables a committee to limit players to using only a yardage book that it has approved for use in a competition. This local rule is intended only for the highest levels of competitive golf. So a little bit closer look, it will further limit the use of green reading materials, gives committee ability to establish officially approved yardage book for a competition. Also limits handwriting notes players and caddies can add to approved yardage book, available starting January 1st, 2022 and intended only for the highest levels of competitive golf. Speaking of great caddies, how about our own John Wood? He's traveled all over the world. He's caddied for Kalk and Cooch and Linus, Kevin Sutherland, who liked that white towel all over the golf course. And now, one of our best holding a microphone. He'll be on the coverage from the Hero World Challenge. He joins us right now from the Bahamas. Woody, it's good to see you. News from the USGA and R&A limiting the use of these green books. What will that mean for the best players in the world?
You know, it's an interesting change, and it's only for the PGA Tour, obviously, the highest level, as you guys mentioned. It's going to be tough. I think, you know, there's a whole generation of players who haven't played a PGA Tour event without a greens book. They've based their whole reading routine, especially a guy like Bryson, completely around percentages, slopes, and speeds. And for them to pick up an entirely new way of reading greens in a couple months, it's going to be tough. The toughest thing to me is the notes part of it, in that you have to take notes only based on your observations. You can't be told, your coach can't tell you, hey, this putt on 12 breaks more than you think. You can remember that, but you cannot write that down in your book. The other thing I think is going to be tough is, like, Phil Mickelson is famous for having notebooks full of notes for short game. You can get up and down from here, you can't from here. Well, he can't use those notes anymore unless he writes them in the official yardage book. He can't take out, you know, the little handwritten notebooks that he's had over the years. So it's going to be a tough enforcement, and I kind of feel for the rules officials on it.
Well, that's my question, John. How enforceable is this, actually? I mean, at what point can they decide this note was based on your own observations, this you were told by another caddy in the locker room? I mean, it seems to be a lot of gray area here.
I completely agree, Eamon, and the bottom line is going to be an honor system. No matter how suspicious a note may look, if the player or caddy says, no, I wrote this down during a practice round when I saw a ball do this, then that's the end of it. It's going to be tough to think, certain guys, I'm not saying any names, but certain guys will probably do some copying from an old Greens book, and it'll look like they took the notes themselves. I think there'll be some suspicion from other players. And it's going to be tough because, like I said, it's just the honor system at the end of the day. And I don't think it's out of the question that it becomes so confusing out there that they come back in a year. So I don't know what the answer is going to be. It's going to be interesting to find out. I kind of wish they would have gone the way of when they outlawed the belly putter. They gave guys a year to kind of get ready for it. I wish they would have, instead of 2 months now, they would have had an entire year and 2 months to kind of get ready for the transition. But it is what it is, and these guys will adapt, and I hope it goes smoothly.
We've heard a lot of players over the last couple of years, as the controversy around green reading books has built up, John, say that these books take away a skill, that it is a learned skill in this game to read a green. Where do you fall on that question?
It is a skill. But so is reading a Greens book correctly. When I caddied, I saw as many putts missed because of using the Greens book incorrectly as I saw made because they were used correctly. And if you look at two basic stats, from the 12 years before Greens book, three putt percentage has virtually stayed the same as has one putt conversion percentage to 12 years since we've had Green book. So those two stats, I know they're very basic, but they've basically stayed the same. So I don't see how you can say it's made it easier. And if you want, if you want greens reading to be a skill the players must have, then you shouldn't allow the caddies to help read at all, because you can buy a greens reader if you're a player, find the best greens reader out there and pay them. So you don't necessarily need that. So I see it as a skill, but I also see reading greens with a greens book a skill.
Tiger Woods could read a green pretty well at the height of his power. You know, Noda came on this show and said he's a warrior. Essentially, this ain't no hobby. This comeback isn't just to say hi and to shake hands and kiss babies. What's the energy like around Tiger Woods this week, knowing that he's come back many, many times from off the mat?
I'll tell you what, there's 20 of the greatest players in the world playing in this event, but the biggest story is the one guy hitting balls at the back of the range. So I think people would have rather bought a ticket for that than watch these 20 great players warm up here on the range. But there's definitely a buzz. I think everybody's surprised at how fast this recovery has happened. I think everybody anticipated it to be, much further down the line, but to see him making full swings, with three woods, it's pretty impressive, and I think everybody's really excited to have him hopefully back sooner than we all anticipated.
All right, Woody, one more for you. First round coverage at 1:30 right here on Golf. For the viewers watching at home, I see the flags whipping behind you. How tough of a day is it for a caddy and a player when the wind is up? How much of this is going to truly be a work day, even if it is a limited field?
Yeah, the winds are supposed to be around 15 miles an hour all week long, so you won't have to worry about changes, but this is kind of normal for this place. And you don't get many switches. They're not tricky winds. It's a very flat course, so you know where it's coming from. And sometimes that steady 15 miles an hour is easier than a 10 or a 5 that flips around all the time. So these guys are so good. It's not like it's 25 or 30. It'll help on some holes. It'll hurt on others. But I think all these guys are going to be good enough to adapt to a wind like this.
Woody, you always cover all the bases for us. We appreciate your time. Have a great walk. We'll listen to you on the broadcast.
Thanks for having me, guys. Have a great day.
All right. What's coming up, pal?
Well, still to come on Golf Today, we're going to talk about Newsmakers of the Year. That might be one of them right there, Colin Morikawa. But Damon and I will give our choices in the non-Tiger division.
Man, I love sports. I love golf. Time now for our 2021 newsmakers. A lot of news to talk about. Fantastic year, fantastic play. Top newsmaker 2021.
Well, we definitely have to specify this is the non-Tiger division, since when he shows up and does something like just hit a three-second chip shot in a video, he tends to make the news and break the news. To me, it's got to be Bryson DeChambeau. And if I was going to pick one word to describe his year, it's got to be frantic. It could be futile. It could be theatrical. I mean, there are a lot of words to apply to Bryson's year, but it was just endlessly exhausting, and it had to be exhausting for Bryson because nobody else propelled more storylines in this game this year than Bryson. From that arms aloft drive at Bay Hill all the way back in March, the endless feud with Brooks Koepka, which took us all the way up to the match. You know, there was the spat with the media that is ongoing ever since Detroit, the same week that his caddy disappeared into thin air overnight after several years. The meltdown at the US Open, I think, was really a noteworthy moment as well. And you can look back here at Torrey Pines, and it began on the 13th hole. And he went from sharing the lead, making the turn, to coming home in 44 strokes over that nine holes, and then was quite insistent afterwards that it didn't bother him because he already had one of these in the US Open. And then insisted afterwards that it was just due to bad luck. And, you know, his day got worse, and in some ways his year got worse, actually, as the theatrics went on. But here he's, you know, this is the hole where he actually hit a shank later on it as well. At one point he tried to attribute it to the streaker that couldn't even actually be seen where Bryson was out there. But it was just, this was kind of symptomatic of Bryson's year. He's making headlines all the time, but not necessarily for the right reasons.
I remember being out there at that press conference when he said, well, I've already got one of these, and it was hollow. It seemed almost like a child would say that, you know, this didn't hurt, this didn't bother me. Of course it bothered him and it hurt. And I think that Bryson at sometimes has been his own worst enemy. For as much as he should be praised for what he has done in terms of putting in the work and putting his game at risk, changing his body and going about it a different way, he's also put his foot in his mouth quite a bit in 2021 and given us a lot to chew on.
And he keeps doing it as well. And there's a trend here, you see, with Bryson, is that he finds it very difficult to handle himself in what are emotionally tough circumstances. And we saw it again at the Open Championship as well, when, first of all, he started to deny that he ever does not shout four whenever he's actually hitting the ball deliberately over the gallery's head. When there's evidence that he doesn't actually shout four, he insisted he does. And then he had the spat with his equipment manufacturer over his driver, and I believe we have that sound we can listen to as well.
Yeah, and that's what I said yesterday, yesterday, if I can hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great. But again, with the driver right now, the driver sucks. It's not a good face for me, and we're still trying to figure out how to make it good on the miss hits. And, you know, I'm living on the razor's edge, like I've told people for a long time. And, you know, when I did get it outside of the fairway, like in the first cut and whatnot, I catch jumpers out of there and I couldn't control my wedges.
This driver sucks. These people bend over backwards to manufacture very specific equipment for Bryson. And to me, one of the highlights of the year was when Cobra Puma clapped back.
They did.
And they said, basically, it's like dealing with an 8-year-old child, and more power to them. It had to be said.
Yeah, I hope that the people in his camp, and I think they are, you got to get in his ear. I feel like he has a chance to be Paul Bunyan. He has a chance to be this larger-than-life figure, and too often he just makes these odd comments, and they are, I think that the matter and the word I would probably use is immature. I don't think this is going to be the story of Bryson at 40. I could be wrong. This could be a Sergio type of situation where these incidents follow him and follow him. But I feel like as much joy as I get watching Bryson, like, take apart a golf course and do things different way, and I thought that Bay Hill was the top mark for him. He continues to step in it time and time again. And I also thought that the Ryder Cup was a redemptive week for him because he had the armor of Team USA around him.
As was the Long Drive Championship that he showed up in later in the year as well. And those are all the highlights that show why Bryson DeChambeau is as compelling and as popular as he is. It's his inability to really button his lip once in a while in difficult situations. And this isn't a new thing. You can remember a few years ago he blew a tournament in Europe, the Porsche Open in Germany, and he could barely even manage to shake the hand of the guy who beat him.
It was Richard McAvoy. Advance. Yeah.
Stormed off the golf course. And, you know, he has a chance to redeem himself. He hasn't had a great year this year when you look at his finishes in the majors. Not a single top 20 in those events. He obviously won at Bay Hill. He is the most dominant newsmaker of the year to me. He may well be the same guy next year, but at a certain point, you've got to see some evidence of maturity, and I'm not seeing it.
Yeah, and I have to think that that Vegas hit and giggle had to have bothered him as well.
He wasn't giggling.
He was not giggling. Brooks was giggling, you know, and I'd like to see these two on a championship Sunday when it counts. I want to see them be Nelly and Jin Young Ko, or Tiger and Phil, or Jack and Arnie. I want to see them when it counts. Listen, anything that brings attention to golf, I think, is good. Brings viewers, that's fine. But, you know, are the history books going to remember that week?
There's a difference between a feud and a rivalry.
Yes.
And it always amused me when people kept referring to them as rivals. I mean, neither of them can even remember when they played together last. And if you're not going head-to-head in events that matter, in rounds that matter, then you are not rivals. This is a schoolyard spat.
Did the tour miss an opportunity?
Absolutely. The tour should have put them together early in the year, on a Thursday, Friday, when there was nothing of consequence, because the tour was taking the risk that they would play their way into a pairing on the weekend when there was something at stake. The tour didn't want to embolden what they saw as the worst elements in the gallery that would have jumped on this kind of feud narrative, and particularly on DeChambeau. So, which is why I think the tour embraced the whole match concept at the end, because they realized that fans would say, this is commercial, it was a stunt from the start, and we're not interested. And I think the tour gambled correctly. My question is, why did that have to be somebody else's commercial benefit?
Yeah.
There were eight sponsors on the PGA Tour this year who had both of those guys in the field at the same time. They might have enjoyed the attention from having them paired together rather than see it happen in a made-for-TV.
Yeah, Brooks and Bryson separated by one group this week in the Bahamas. Tee time 12:44 for Bryson DeChambeau. My newsmaker, I go to the LPGA Tour, and it's Nelly Korda. And the word to describe her year is golden, and that can be the gold medal. That's the easy way, but it's also just how great her golf was this year. And it also transcended the game. Did you see Forbes' latest 30 under 30? It includes Simone Biles and Vlad Guerrero Jr., Dak Prescott. I mean, Devin Booker of the Suns. LPGA, congrats to Nelly on being named Forbes under 30. That means you are a transcendent figure in the game beyond what you do on the basketball court or inside the ropes. She won five times in all, including the Olympic gold. Major champ, became world number one. And yes, Jin Young Ko caught her at the tape and passed her in Naples. But I think Nelly Korda's year was transcendent.
Do you know how good you have to be to just simply be the dominant athlete within Nelly Korda's own family?
Yes.
He says between her parents and her siblings. And obviously her brother's had a great year in his, year in his tennis career as well. Jessica Korda also won on the LPGA Tour this year. But it's hard to think of a different name, certainly in the women's game, who is a bigger newsmaker. And we had this discussion with Paige McKenzie yesterday over who ought to be player of the year. My argument was very simple, that in the four regular events that Nelly Korda won, Jin Young Ko was in the field in all of them. Mm. In the five events that Jin Young Ko won, Nelly Korda played twice. And to me, it's that fact of the going of head-to-head against each other in the same field, the same week, same conditions. Nelly Korda was coming out on top.
What a family. Just shot 60 and won the tournament in Orlando, the Diamond Resort. Seb had a great week and fortnight, really, at Wimbledon.
Jess shoots 60, and she's the third most talked about athlete in the family.
That's
a tough standard to live up to.
No doubt. Proud mama and papa, no doubt. So who's the biggest newsmaker in golf this year? That's our social question of the day. What would your headline be for their year? The best responses gonna make this show. So put your talents to good use. We still can't wait for 2022. What are you looking forward to, man? I mean, we're still catching our breath from 2021, but you know me, I'm kind of an optimist. I'm a little hyper excited about the game of golf.
No one's ever said that about me, Dame.
But I want you to be optimistic. What are you looking forward to?
I can't wait to the U.S. Open next summer at the Country Club. This is one of the great old designs in America, and it dates back a long way, but we haven't seen it host a tournament since the 1999 Ryder Cup. Ooh. But we haven't actually seen it since right here, 33 years ago, it hosted the last major championship when Curtis Strange won the first of two back-to-back US Opens. And I'm just curious to see how one of the great old architectural gems in this country can hold itself up to the modern power game.
Yeah, you know, living in Connecticut now, I've heard so much about the Country Club just down the road in Massachusetts. When Curtis went back-to-back, SI famously put him on the cover and said, move over, Ben Hogan. Supposed to be one of the kind of coolest experiences. You know, when you go to a great country club, it's not just the golf course. It's kind of the vibe you get, and it's the locker room or the showers or the food. And I can't wait to see the modern game, considering how much the equipment has changed since 1999 when Justin Leonard was making that mile-long putt to help the Americans get it done.
And how many times are we going to see that putt during the live from shows from the country club when we get there next June?
Justin says he's asked about that putt almost every time he leaves home and goes to the airport and somebody asks about it. And he still has the shirt.
I hope he ain't going to wear it next summer,
though. Probably a little musty. He's an Open champ, by the way, and that's what I'm most looking forward to, by the way, is St. Andrews, 150th edition of the Open. And guess what? Someone else is looking forward to the 150th Open as well.
Yeah, I would love to. I'd love to play at St. Andrews. There's no doubt about it. It's my favorite golf course in the world, and to be a two-time Open champion there, I would like just like to this. Just even being a part of the champions' dinner is really neat. from my first one in 05 was my first one I got to attend the champions' dinner. It was pretty neat to be a part of and. You know, Peter Thompson was still alive, and I sat right next to him and to hear him tell the stories of when he came over and he played and shots he played and where he won, how he did it. It was awesome. You know, those are things like at the Masters. Those dinners are priceless. And those stories and listen to them talk about how they played and when they played it and what they did. And it's just an honor to be a part of a room like that. And, yes, I would love to be able to play that Open Championship. Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And this, physically, and hopefully I can. I got to get there first, okay? The tournament's not going to go anywhere, but I need to get there.
Look at that smile. I mean, when you talk about the old course at St. Andrews, you think about the history of this game, the home of golf, and it's all about the stories. For him, it's the dinners and the memories of winning in 2000. And in 2005, what does it mean to you?
Well, there are just ghosts everywhere at St. Andrews. I mean, you go out and walk around that golf course and you can stand there and try to play out of the bunker where Bobby Jones tore up a scorecard in the 1920s and stormed off the golf course and was described by the local press as an unremarkable boy. And, but, you know, you can stand there on that 18th green where every single great player in the history of the game, with the sole exception of Ben Hogan, has walked over that Swilkin Bridge and played that hole, and you're finishing off right in front of the old Tom Morris golf shop where he lived. The place where he died is right along the 18th fairway as well in the new clubhouse. So it's just the history of this place is just everywhere. You cannot avoid it. It's just a great atmosphere to the place.
In 2010, I went for Sports Illustrated. The Louis Oosthuizen wins. It's dark. I'm visiting a buddy, Mark Canizero, golf writer for the New York Post, who's living in a flat that week right across from 18. He finishes filing his story. I've done mine. He says, you want to go play? And we went out to the 18th in the dark, probably against the rules, and we played the 18th hole. He made four. I drop-kicked my drive. You can see sparks flew. That's how badly I hit it. But I still somehow toughed out a five at the last.
I'd be more impressed if you tried to hit it over the hotel on the tee shot on 17.
Oh, I've done that. Well, not in the dark, but the one time I did play it, unfortunately, I took a route that many, you know, high handicappers have taken a little too close to the china on top of that hotel where people are having cocktails.
Few windows there myself.
No doubt. Cannot wait for the summertime. Well, this is a big day as well for the best players in the world. Xander Schauffele, speaking of golden, Olympic gold medalist on the putting green, T8 in this event in 2018, T10 in 2019. He's off at 12:11 p.m. Eastern time, and we are back right after this. Back on Golf Today, we're leading you right into Golf Central pregame at noon to get you set for first-round action from the Hero World Challenge at 1:30 p.m. Eastern time right here on Golf. As John Wood told us, wind about 15 miles per hour for 20 of the best in the game. Hero, of course, makes motorcycles. Like them.
Who could imagine such cruelty could be inflicted by something so beautiful as that golf course?
Exactly. Here are the odds to win, powered by our good friends at PointsBet Sportsbook. Rory McIlroy, co-favorite, alongside a fellow major champ, Colin Morikawa, recently engaged. Chance to be number one with a win this week. Last time we saw Rory, didn't go so well. Lost the tournament, maybe lost a couple buttons as well.
I hope he doesn't see you keeping this up there, Damon. Otherwise, there might be another couple of expletives dropped.
Hopefully he's already out on the range. Again, thank goodness he is out on the range. That's a very nice looking shirt. Look, he's smiling, having some fun, kind of looks loosey-goosey. Important week for him?
I don't think so. I don't think it's a particularly important week. I think he's kind of on the track that he's going to stay on over the course of the next couple of months, which is getting more reacquainted with Michael Bannon, getting his swing back to the level that he's comfortable with. And he's talked about that in depth, about how he's spending his time with Bannon, trying to clear off some of the rust that has accumulated on it, or the scar tissue, I suppose, from the extra swing thoughts this year. And that dates all the way back to last year when he admitted that he started to chase speed like Bryson. So I think he's hit his reset button. This week, I think, is for him something of a hit and giggle, but it would certainly send a message if he were to play really well and win.
For all the consternation about his lack of a major championship since 2014, he's 32 years of age. You know, think about how long it took Phil and Justin Rose and Adam Scott and Ben Hogan to win their first major championship. So perhaps in the big picture, when he's 40 and 45, we'll look back and say that he figured out a way to get off this major championship snide. But we do hear him kind of, I feel like, searching for ways to approach big tournaments and having to remember who he is. And I have to like the man in the mirror and trust the man in the mirror and know that my best is good enough. Why do you think he kind of has these fits and starts and maybe moments of doubt?
I think he's looking to maximize every possible angle to get that major championship. If you went back to 2018, he had a kind of a mental game guru following him around for several tournaments, including at Augusta National, and the whole objective was to take pressure off himself, to kind of de-stress during those weeks and to de-emphasize the importance of those weeks. And then he realized by the end of that year that he actually needed to do the opposite, that doing that didn't work for him, that he really needed to kind of fire up the stress level a little bit, put a little bit more pressure on himself to perform. So he's played all of these little kind of angles all the time, always looking for that edge that he needs. And there have been plenty of majors where he has not been far off over the last 7 years since he won one. But, you know, he put himself in the mix at Torrey Pines this year as well until that double bogey in the middle of the back nine on Sunday. So he's not that far away. But, you know, it's, you would believe from the narrative that he's miles away and hasn't been close to it in 7 or 8 years at this point. But he really isn't that far away. But he does need to kind of close that narrative off, and I think that's his number one goal for next year.
Never forget when Jack sat down with Faraday and Ricky Fowler, and Ricky was saying, yeah, I treat all the tournaments the same, and Jack was saying, no, don't treat them the same. Elevate the majors. I always knew when the majors were. Ramp up for the majors. I, too, was surprised when Rory in the run-up to the Open at Royal Portrush was like, yeah, I'm just kind of trying to minimize it, and I thought he should treat it like his own personal Ryder Cup. You're going to have voices in the crowd that you recognize and faces in the crowd that are going to be living and dying with every shot. Kind of, you use that energy.
Yeah, and that was a really interesting week for him because he didn't show up at the golf course until Tuesday afternoon, and that told me that he was trying to keep under the limelight that week, keep out of the pressure cooker, and it showed up on the very first tee shot.
Yeah, it sure did. Out of bounds. Another great pairing today. JT and Brooks Koepka, 12:33 p.m. Eastern time. Take a look at Justin Thomas, and you mentioned it earlier in the week, just the stress of the year, almost from the beginning, the outlier win at the Players where he was 7 shots back with 36 holes to play, and him calling this year poor, and not just because of the golf. He lost his grandfather, his father dealing with some health issues at the end of the year as well.
Yeah, but he's finally started to show a little bit of life again. He was third at Mayakoba, he was fourth at the Northern Trust, fourth in the Tour Championship. And he actually just confirmed this morning that he will defend his PNC Championship title with his father. And you know what that means, Damon? It leaves one spot left in the parent-child field. I wonder who's taking that.
That might be the biggest tell of all. Now that the Thomas family is set, that perhaps the Woods family will join them in Orlando. I tell you, I look at Justin Thomas, and I see him on the putting green, and it's appropriate. He's 112th strokes gained putting in 2021. He was in the 40s and 50s there in 2017 and 2018. He's been in the hundreds in strokes gained putting, and he says he has to stop being wooden on the greens and be more natural. It's one thing to say it, you know, now you got to do it. You do have a new caddy on the bag, and in Bones McKay, who might give him some new energy as well.
Yeah, I think that could be a great reset button for a guy like JT to have Bones on the bag, because every tournament I've seen JT at this year, he spends a lot more time on the putting green grinding with his dad than he does on the actual range, hitting full shots or even in the short game area. It's definitely something that's bothering him. It's troublesome. His statistical performance has dropped off. But, you know, I've always argued a good caddy like Bones could be worth a shot a week or more.
Could be. That's a fiery duo between JT and Bones.